Two out of three falls is the flavor of the month for WWE. The Miz gets beat down by Elias and Shane. And Kofi Kingston finally ends his program with Ziggler. Your full SmackDown Live review starts right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast. Your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
If you're easily offended, this may not be the show for you.
Whatever happened to the men being able to physically retaliate against the women in WWE? This is a fantasy environment.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
This is your SmackDown Live review for the WWE Podcast for SmackDown Live that aired yesterday on the 25th of June. Today is the 26th of June, 2019. We're going to get to the full SmackDown Live review, which overall I thought was an okay show. I really don't think that, just like most SmackDowns, it progressed a whole lot of storylines, and how we're just getting these matches randomly, while they make sense, they're not telling the audience how they came about. Samoa Joe is getting a WWE Championship match. He's getting rewarded for attacking the champion with no explanation. Unless I missed something, there was just no evolution, no explanation for Samoa Joe getting the championship match. Apparently, that's just how you get a match with the champion, is just attack them. Attack them backstage, attack them during their match, and you just get rewarded with an opportunity for the championship. That's what we're being told. As deserving as Samoa Joe is, which, by the way, I never talked about last night. I'm really, after I uploaded the file, I said, oh my God, I never really got into depth about Kofi and Samoa Joe. So I'm going to lead off with that in just a minute. But before I do, guys, thank you so much for listening to this show. It is a pleasure to be able to speak with you guys, and it's a honor to be able to take up the time that you have, your free time, to listen to me talk about wrestling, the one thing that we all love. And if you don't love wrestling, I don't know why you're listening to this. I would assume that you are a fan, a big fan of wrestling, if you listen to wrestling podcasts, more than the average fan. I think you're more than just the typical casual pop in, pop out of the wrestling world, that you are immersed and heavily invested in wrestling. I really believe that those are the fans that are listening to this show. And new fans, welcome to. Again, I want to thank you for being able to make this show a success. Check out the website, WWEpodcast.com. It has all of these shows for you. If you have a desktop, mobile device, whatever, it's available for you. And also on Patreon, I don't mention that a whole lot, and I really should, because it would save you from all the ads. You want no ads? Patreon is the way to go. And I want to give a shout out to our latest patron. That is Sherry V. Gould. That's Sherry V. Gould. I hope I pronounced that right. So I apologize if I didn't, but thank you so much for joining the Patreon feed, where you get 100% of these shows ad-free. So thank you very much. You can do that at patreon.com/WWEpodcast. And thank you so much. And again, there are a lot of people, I'll be honest with you, that love this show, and I think there are a very few that while they're the minority, I believe anyway, are very vocal in really hating this show. Like, they really hate me, and that's fine. That's fine. I really believe that's a sign of success, that once you start to get bigger, people will be critics of you, and that's cool. And I'm all for it. It's whatever. Like, hey, you don't like this show, lots of other options out there. And look, I encourage you to listen to other wrestling podcasts. I think that makes you a more intelligent fan. It makes you a more educated fan. And it's just fun to listen to wrestling in all different voices, all different formats and everything else. So, it's just a cool deal. So, anyway. All right, let's get on to some good stuff. And the one thing that I really like that's going on right now is I do like Samoa Joe in this spot. I think he's more than deserving. I think it's well past due for Samoa Joe to be in the main event picture in a championship opportunity for a top championship. And to me, the WWE Championship, I don't think anyone would argue, has much more prestige to it than does the Universal Championship. So, with all the lineage behind it, I'm glad that Samoa Joe is going after Kofi Kingston. Now, again, the logic behind this is not sound. And WWE has a history of this, that just, oh, well, Samoa Joe brutally attacked Kofi Kingston, and he gets a championship match at Extreme Rules. Well, how? Again, while the attack we all believed was going to lead to him, Samoa Joe, being the next opponent for Kofi Kingston, just fill in that little gap there. How does that happen? Who decided that? Did Kofi barge in and kick in the door of management and say, damn it, McMahons, I want Samoa Joe at Extreme Rules. I don't care if I have to put my title on the line. Just give me Samoa Joe. It could be as simple as that. Samoa Joe demanded it, or Kofi Kingston demanded it. There's just no explanation for it. This is the kind of stuff that you guys think I'm being negative about, but it's just basic storytelling. They just skip a huge step, and it is now telling fans that, well, to earn a championship match, all you got to do is attack the champion, no matter who you are. So that really, in essence, puts anybody in contention for the top, for any championship. Just attack the champion in the dressing room, walking to the ring. Doesn't matter. That's how you get a championship match. It's this kind of storytelling that, look, again, I agree with the decision of Samoa Joe, but when you want to tell a proper story, my God, this is basics. So it's basics. So that's my one critique about this. And the same thing goes for Roman Reigns and The Undertaker versus Drew McIntyre and Shane McMahon. Is okay. I could see where this could lead to a tag team match, but just tell me how you got there. Just tell me. And I mentioned this on last night's show reviewing Raw and Stomping Grounds. Give us a reason, and I hope they do, I believe they will, for give us a reason from The Undertaker of why he decided to attack Shane and Drew. Why did he come to the aid of Roman Reigns? Did he earn the respect of... Did The Undertaker respect Roman Reigns for beating him at WrestleMania 33? How did this come about? What prompted The Undertaker to do this? Give us something. I hope they will. I'm crossing my fingers they will. But inexplicably, they just rush to tell us that this is the tag team match at Extreme Rules. They just rush to it. Like, we all know that's probably where they were going. But how? How do you get there? It's like going from chapter one of a book to chapter five. And what happened with 2, 3, 4? Come on. Please, anything. Who decided this? Okay, but again, back to the good thing I like is Samoa Joe. He is being positioned as a legitimate threat to Kofi Kingston. And as we get further and further from WrestleMania, as much as I believe, and I will stick by my opinion, that WrestleMania wins, particularly the championship wins, need to stick and mean something, and so you need to have a long reign of, again, I would say 6 months, but in WWE's mind, and in today's gotta have it world, short attention span society and fan base, 3 months is probably long term. So at this point, I would say Kofi Kingston, as he gets further and further away, just as Seth Rollins gets further and further away, just as Becky Lynch gets further and further away, heels will eventually come knocking. And it's just as Aleister Black finally got a knock. So we'll get to that too. But as we get further away, the opponents will become increasingly more likely to defeat the champion. So Samoa Joe next in line, while I don't believe he will capture the championship, I would say he has a higher percentage of capturing the championship than Dolph Ziggler did at his last few opportunities. And I believe that chapter is officially closed for Dolph. so I don't know where they're going with his character. I mentioned that on Raw. I didn't think that they would go back to Kofi and Dolph, but they did. So now, okay, now it's definitely closed. Where are they going? Where are they going with Dolph? I would think that he'd go back in the Intercontinental title picture, but with Shinsuke Nakamura clearly the next one in line for Finn, I don't know. Maybe he inserts himself somehow, and it's a three-way for the IC title, and he's just defined down to the Intercontinental title picture. That's kind of where Dolph has lived his entire career, outside of that one championship run the night after WrestleMania 27 when he cashed in against Alberto Del Rio. I mean, that's really it. He has lived in the mid to mid upper card his entire career, and I think he will end his career in the mid to mid upper card. So maybe that's probably where he goes, is my guess. So as we all kind of expected, but Samoa Joe's front and center as the opponent for Kofi Kingston. And I think this is a multi-month feud, as it should be. So while Samoa Joe may not win at Extreme Rules, you could easily drag this out to SummerSlam. And maybe Joe wins there. And I'm fine with champions going from WrestleMania to SummerSlam. I mean, to me, that's like the bare minimum. But I'm cool with it. I'm fine with it. I'll let it go, as if they need my approval. And I will be okay if Joe doesn't win until SummerSlam. Again, assuming that they even want Joe to be champion. It will be criminal. It should be a criminal act and something in the penal code in which if you do not allow Samoa Joe to be champion and give him a run with a top belt and let him be a nasty, legitimate, just kick your ass in your face heel, it should be punishable by jail time. Like, management should be cuffed and they should be put in jail for, I don't know, like 30 days without bail. Something like that. Like, it needs to happen. And the fact that it hasn't happened yet is, it really would, I would put them on probation. Like, give them a warning, like a citation or something. It needs to happen. I'm not saying it's going to be 100% successful. I mean, I've been advocating for it since Joe came onto the scene as Triple H's heavy and attacked Seth Rollins, and Seth Rollins' knee got tweaked when he put him in the coquina clutch. So there's a lot of legitimacy with Joe. Joe is, again, sorely underutilized, poorly booked, and really needs this opportunity. And it needs to not be like, well, we'll dip our toe in and we'll see how it goes. And you know, maybe, well, I don't know. Well, let's try, but not really. And kind of go halfway. No. This is not a half-assed project. Joe has the credentials. Joe is believable. Joe has the background. He has the mileage. He's earned this championship opportunity well ahead of many men in that locker room. He has paid his dues in front of the audience. And even those that didn't even follow him on the independents and follow him in New Japan still know that when Samoa Joe comes out and he speaks, you believe him. As poorly and terribly as he has been booked over the years, you still believe him. That is a tribute to Joe. That is not a tribute, a credit to the management and creative. That's how good Samoa Joe can be. And he could be a champion in which you get to the point of like, oh my God, somebody please come along and beat him down. Where he is beating opponents soundly in a fashion similar to Brock Lesnar, where he just is dominant. You redefine who Samoa Joe is. This is the chance to hit the reset button and hit the reset button in a big way. I don't want to say this is now or never, but when is the next time Samoa Joe is going to be put in a championship picture? It hasn't happened yet. And it's finally here against an opponent that is beatable. The problem is it's Kofi Kingston, the guy that's also been here much longer than Samoa Joe, who has paid their dues in front of the WWE audience for 11 years and is beloved. And the audience and WWE is loving the fact that, hey, they can promote that they have an African-American champion. And I'm fine with that. I support that. That's not the issue. But I brought this up, but it's such a valid point. And I think it's more of a factor than people realize. of, oh, he's talking about race again. No, I'm pro having an African-American champion. I think it's a good thing. I want that because it's long overdue. That's not the point. My personal views have nothing to do with this. But when you look at what WWE, the brand is, think about what WWE, the brand is, how much promotion they do, all the charity work they do. They're supporting the Pride Month and all that stuff, right? And they're always looking to diversify and be progressive and all that. Wouldn't it behoove you, if you're the if you're WWE, to have a marquee match with your African American champion? Wouldn't you want to be able to say that? I mean, his name has to be champion for life, but it's, I think, a big factor. And of course, as equally as important as the legitimate fan support for Kofi Kingston, which is well earned, well documented, and is organic and is real. And all of that is put together. So that's what makes me fearful that Samoa Joe, because it's Kofi Kingston and who he is and how he's won the championship and the struggle he had to get through to get where he is, may outweigh Samoa Joe's potential awesome heel run as the top guy. I think it may outweigh it, also considering that it'll be the middle of July and Kofi Kingston won that championship at the beginning of April. So it would have been just past that 3-month mark with Kofi as champion. So that is it time to pull the trigger? Probably not. That's why I'm leaning more towards if they have a second match at SummerSlam, I'm leaning more towards that. I'm thinking Kofi Kingston could lose it at SummerSlam. That's a much more realistic target if you're thinking about Joe being champion and really redefining Samoa Joe. Think about all the interviews and promos and sit-down interviews and sneak attacks and brutality, all of that. How much Samoa Joe could be utilized. It would be awesome. So that's a positive. You guys want some positivity? That's a big one for me. I'm not looking, again, not Extreme Rules. I really don't think it'll happen there. I wouldn't completely rule it out, but I'd say unlikely. More likely at SummerSlam if Joe is still the opponent. And my God, I just hope it happens. I need to see it. Another big story coming out of SmackDown Live is The Miz getting beat down in a pretty brutal fashion by Elias and Shane McMahon. And we kept waiting for Roman's music to hit, the gong to go off, and neither one happened. Again, this kind of just also shows you that WWE still views SmackDown as the B show. I know they say that on air, but it is true. You don't have The Undertaker coming to SmackDown and having Raw feed off SmackDown. It's SmackDown getting leftovers from Raw all the time. All the time. Tell me one person out there that believes that SmackDown is the flagship show. It's just not. It's just not. It may be 2 hours, which is an awesome time to watch wrestling, not three. So it's shorter, which makes it immediately better. It may be more wrestling focused, which I like. I think most of us like that, and most of us crazily watch wrestling to watch wrestling. And so those are positives, but just the stars that are on the show, the progression of storylines in the show is minimal. It just still is presented as the B show, no matter how much they want to say otherwise. But nonetheless, Shane beat down The Miz, and nobody saved him. Nobody. So this continuing feud with The Miz that has been going on for months and months now is still going on. And you know what? I'm still fine. I'm fine with it because I didn't get that resolution to The Miz and Shane that I wanted. Miz said that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, maybe more, that he was done with Shane and he's moving on. And I'm glad that he didn't. I'm glad that he continued to pursue this loose end that is Shane McMahon. So bravo to the creative team by not letting this one go, okay? This needed to be resolved. and Shane McMahon has two wins over The Miz, and it needed to be resolved with Shane eventually getting absolutely demolished, maybe getting cornered by Roman Reigns, Miz, and Undertaker, and them all hitting their finishers, Shane gets destroyed, and we all go home happy. I mean, I think maybe that's eventually how this all ends with Shane, but maybe that's my mind fantasy booking. But again, this gets heat immediately right back on Shane. Immediately. And he's right now probably the top heel on SmackDown. Maybe the top heel in the company. Drew McIntyre is a damn close second. And I like where Drew McIntyre is positioned right now. But I am liking Shane McMahon. As much as I do criticize the fact that Shane shouldn't be positioned to be on equal footing with any of the competitors, because he is just now almost a 50-year-old man who is not a real trained performer that just kind of shows up out of nowhere and competes head-to-head with The Undertaker at WrestleMania 32 and all of that. AJ Styles, go down the list. And he's the lone survivor at Survivor Series. The list goes on and on. He wins the World Cup. All of that's true, and I stand by that too. But at the same time, boy, he's a good heel. He is a damn good heel. He really is. And I enjoy seeing him get his ass kicked. And that's what I like. Again, as much as I criticize, if I enjoy seeing somebody get their ass kicked, I'm enjoying wrestling, and that's why we like it. So to see him getting chokeslammed on Raw, I know I said this last night, but I'll reiterate. It was awesome. Like, I popped. I was like, yes. I vocally said yes. It made me feel good. Shane McMahon's doing a great job as a heel. So he got himself right back in the heat and put him, got The Miz brutally beat down, and they both walk out. And Elias is, again, playing second fiddle here, even though he's the young upcoming performer. Again, kind of plays second fiddle to Shane. But at least Elias is doing something other than sitting out there and just doing his normal routine. So there's that too. Only thing I didn't like about Shane on SmackDown was the very opening of SmackDown. That couldn't have been a more read, memorized promo if you tried. I actually believe, if you guys go back and look, because I paid attention to this, because it got so bad while as Shane was reciting his promo, that I said to myself, is he reading cue cards? There's got to be. And there were a few times I looked directly into his eyes, and you could see his eyes scaling back and forth as if he was physically reading cue cards behind the camera. It got that bad. And that's just the tone didn't feel authentic. It was, that's what the exact issue about tuning out right there. For everything I just said great about Shane, and I think he's a great heel, this is what is fundamentally wrong with WWE. And again, maybe a little bit of the fault is on Shane for not trying to come across more authentic. But if your solution to making sure that everybody says every word you want them to say, which is a problem in and of itself, you should leave it to the stars to fill in the blanks. Having anybody, I don't care, it's not just Shane, anybody physically read cue cards and deliver it in that way is just awful. You don't do that, okay? Go back. If you don't believe me, you think I'm just complaining to complain. I'm not. Go watch the very first 2 minutes of SmackDown. Listen to Shane McMahon and tell me if you really legitimately believe in what he is saying. Please. And come on the show. I'll bring you on the show. I mean, really. I will let you on the show to try to argue with me that he is being authentic there. It's silly. It's nonsensical. And we also had on the show Big E and Xavier Woods defeat Daniel Bryan and Rowan to put themselves in the tag team championship picture. And I'm fine with that too. It also tells you just how thin the tag team division is. Heavy Machinery is, I think, going to kind of poke their head in and out of the championship picture for the tag team division. They're not ready probably for quite some time to be champions, and I'm totally okay with that. They need time to build rapport. They need time to build who they are, get on a hot streak, and then put themselves in the championship picture to eventually win. Totally fine with that. But having Big E and Xavier Woods challenge Daniel Bryan and Rowan makes sense. I think that while the New Day has had their championship run, whether five-time tag team champions, they've had their time as tag team champions. It will be clearly a good match with these four men in the ring. And that's what I want to see. There will be some moments in which you think that New Day is going to capture all the gold. And I think ultimately, though, you'll have Daniel Bryan and Rowan retain. I really believe that because, number one, we've been there and done that. We've seen the New Day as tag team champions, and they don't need the belts. Ultimately, they don't need the belts as much as Daniel Bryan and Rowan do. And to have all the gold on New Day would be, I think, a little bit much, and fans may start to resent it a bit. So Daniel Bryan and Rowan will probably use the hook or crook method to retain their championships, and I'm cool with that too. Right now, the tag team championships are around the waist of the team that should have it. So proper booking there. I don't need to see the New Day's champions. It wouldn't do anything for me. It's like having the Usos as tag team champions. It just feels like they're always tag team champions. Even when they don't have the belts, it still feels like they have the belts. That's weird to think, but that's how I feel about New Day and the Usos. They're both great tag teams. It's like they've had their time. They don't need the belts anymore. As much as you may say, oh, well, nobody's above the belts. Well, there comes a point where there really isn't any value added to the superstar or superstars, wrestlers, to regain their championships that they've held so many times. And just to maybe go after a record of how many times can I, you know, be this champion X amount of times. I mean, I don't need someone to try to break a record of numbers over the holding the prestige and what the championship means. And I think at that point, with New Day and the Usos, for example, they are at that point where the value of holding what that championship means is superseded by, well, we're just going to chase how many times we've become champions, and we can say, well, we're now the sixth time, the seven, the eight, the nine time champion. It just starts to really devalue the championship by then worrying about how many times you've been champion. I think, to me at least, that's how I would view it. So again, Daniel Bryan and Rowan, I love their message. I love what they stand for, although they didn't get any mic time this week in the ring, which I miss. And I think Daniel Bryan really, really gets his heat by standing in the ring and delivering his messages. He's such a good talker. Rowan is a good big man to take the heat for Bryan. And then again, they redefine him, which I like. So right now, the tag team championships, don't move them, keep them. I said this last night too, but they need to just hold the championships as long as humanly possible before they drop them to a babyface team. And, you know, eventually the Bryan and Roman will split. I mean, that's just the nature of tag teams. But don't change the championships right now. It just doesn't do anybody any favors. It's around the waist of the right team. So, all right, let's move along. Another thing that happened was we had Carmella and, of course, R-Truth. And R-Truth hiding in crates and Drake Maverick magically finding him. And said, you know, basically, hey, you ruined my life. And I don't care anymore. And so Truth fakes him like he's going to give him a championship match and then runs off. And of course, we get the constant line, single file line of stars chasing him. That's a little much for me. I understand this championship doesn't have a whole lot of value other than it just being a comedy spot for WWE. And they can just go wild with the creative on it. I totally understand that. But it's beyond cartoonish to have this single file of same guys as if they're attached at the hip running around the building, running around wherever they're, the airport, wherever they are, in single file trying to chase R-Truth. It's the same guys too. I just don't like. Why are they always following each other? Wouldn't you want to not follow the crowd and just kind of be able to sneak up on R-Truth instead of being part of the pack? It's just so silly. That's the only part I don't like. R-Truth is champion is fine. Drake Maverick and him, I hope they continue this long-standing rivalry. That's not really a rivalry. It's just kind of a comedic rivalry. But Drake Maverick is starting to develop a character outside of peeing his pants with the Big Show. Always a good thing. I do like Drake Maverick. I think he's got potential beyond comedy. And maybe it is as a continued as a manager. I don't know, maybe in the 205 Live. Somewhere along the line, Drake Maverick has potential more than what we've seen. And I think right now the 24/7 championship is probably where he should be. And him and R-Truth have a chemistry. So cool. Run with that. I'm liking the gelling that they have of each other and the playing off of each other and the social media that continues with the preposterousness of it. It's all fine and well. Just stop with the single file stuff. For God's sakes, please. Please. Please, please. Another thing, and by the way, one last quick note. I think eventually, I thought about this week, and maybe it's not my original thought, my own brain. Maybe I stole it from somebody and I don't know. But I think Carmella is eventually going to attempt to pin R-Truth and become 24/7 champion. I have that feeling. Because they didn't exempt women from it. So I think you will see Carmella as the 24/7 champion at some point when Truth is in a vulnerable position and Carmella is there to make a quick, easy pin. You'll see it happen. So just a little thought. Bayley versus Nikki Cross. So not the greatest match in the world from a fundamental standpoint, in-ring standpoint. Not the best. It was a little sloppy, and I think that was a lot to do on Nikki's part. But the match served its purpose of having Nikki redeem herself for what happened at Stomping Grounds and getting Alexa another championship opportunity. Again, I don't know what Nikki's motivation is here, trying to win matches for someone else's career. So you're basically putting friendship over your own goals, your own career, in a company that you strive to get in, and everybody's dream is to be there. At least that's what every single promo ever from anybody new would have you believe, to make sure they put over the brand over their own personal goals. Got to make sure the brand is first. It's ridiculous. But to have Nikki do that in a company in which you're supposed to be competing with the top talent to go as high as you can, Nikki is being fooled by Alexa Bliss, and now she's using Alexa Bliss, or Nikki Cross is being used by Alexa Bliss to get championship matches and everything else, and Nikki's just constantly being the fool here. And we all know what's going to end in a tragedy for Nikki Cross. I mean, it just is, right? It's just a matter of when. So Nikki Cross wins and she celebrates like she won a Super Bowl and is just jumping around the ring. I don't think anyone else is cheering with her, but she is. She's jumping around the ring and trying to grab Corey Graves' phone and text Alexa so she can tell her that, hey, I got you a championship match against Bayley at Extreme Rules. So I don't dislike this storyline. I'm just like, what is the end game? What's the end game here? And maybe that's what I'm supposed to be thinking. So, okay, that's cool. And it has me talking about it instead of just dismissing it. It's just funny that Nikki Cross goes from this psychopath that wants to play and is suddenly smiling backstage one day and bumps into Alexa. Like, hey, what's going on, girl? Hey, what's up? You got your coffee. That's cool. And then just suddenly wants to befriend Alexa Bliss. And is smiling backstage, you know, trying to suck up to Alexa. And then when her entrance is start, she comes back into this kind of like psycho girl. It's just weird. It's weird. There's no consistency in Nikki's character right now. So there's a little bit of damage being done to Nikki. At the same time, the positive is she's getting a lot of TV time that she wasn't getting before when she was with Insanity. So there's that too. I like that Nikki Cross is getting TV time. Ultimately, I think that trumps the fact that her character is just kind of all over the damn place. So I'll go with that for now. But soon, I want to see some consistency in where this story's going beyond Nikki looking like a complete fool for trying to help Alexa Bliss, who we all know is using Nikki Cross. So I don't know. But we have also Bayley and Alexa. Does Bayley drop the belt to Alexa? I don't know. I don't think so, because Bayley won it with the Money in the Bank briefcase. Again, I like those championship runs to stick too. And I think Bayley has that belt for at least the foreseeable future. SummerSlam, I think this year is going to be a big, big show, a big transition show, where you could have a lot of heels win their belts back and then have the heels run out the second half of the year up to WrestleMania. That seems to be the formula, and a formula that honestly works. I'm fine with babyfaces climbing and scratching and clawing to get to the top at WrestleMania. They finally beat the heel, win the championship, hold it for 3 to 6 months, and that damn heel wins it back at SummerSlam, or even, you know, towards Hell in a Cell or even Survivor Series. Heels tend to win more later in the year because they'll hold the belts for long periods of time until somebody finally comes along and knocks them off the perch. It's just a better story to tell than a babyface champion going in to defend their championship at WrestleMania. The whole year is built around WrestleMania. I mean, that's the premise I'm going on, because it is. That's where moments that matter happen. That's where legends are born. All the cliches are true, though. So if you're building your whole year around WrestleMania, you want to start to, later in the year, late summer, fall, start to see heels win their belts back. And then you head right back into the pre-WrestleMania season, and we're right back into it. So I know I'm getting way ahead of myself, but that is the formula that WWE has used, and I'm fine with it. It works. Ember Moon and Sonya Deville. Sonya Deville is starting to get more comfortable in a good way. Her and Mandy Rose, I think, could be very good women's tag team champions. Who, by the way, were completely absent this week. Where are the tag? They just won the tag team championships and then just went into hiding. I mean, I don't know. I love the Iconics. I really, really do. Are they the best in-ring performers? No, they aren't. But they don't need to be, because they're so damn obnoxious on the mic that no matter how bad they are in the ring, it still makes me want to see them get their ass kicked. Goal achieved. Box checked. That's what I want. That's what I want to feel, and I feel it with the Iconics. But you have these teams out there, and I understand that it would be heel versus heel with Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose versus the Iconics. I understand that. But down the line, whenever the Iconics lose their belts, maybe it is to a babyface team, and Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville beat that babyface team. Whatever it may be, these two could be a great tag team. Maybe, ultimately the goal is probably for them to go solo. That's usually the goal with any tag team, is to build two individual stars and have them separate and become individual big single stars. That's fine. But they need to have a championship run with the women's tag team belts. I think that it needs to happen with them too. Sonya Deville, as I said, she's becoming more comfortable. She's very camera friendly. And I would say the opposite for Ember Moon, who is just backstage, I don't know, in her reading or doing crossword puzzles or, I don't know, cooking in her crock pot. I don't know what she's doing backstage anymore. It's like she doesn't care to be there. The mystique of Ember Moon was killed when she was just sitting on like one of those storage cases reading a book. Really? So you get to the ultimate pinnacle of what you want in your career. You're this mysterious character, and they just show you backstage, immediately kill your character, any kind of mystery that you had, and you just get bullied by Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose and have magazines thrown at you. That immediately killed Ember Moon for me, and she hasn't recovered since. That's how you kill a character. Not only does it show that she doesn't care about being there from a storyline standpoint, but you ruin the character itself. Like, what does Ember Moon do? What does she do backstage? Well, we all know the answer now. She sits and reads. What is happening? She didn't stand up for herself. She just gives like mean little snarky looks. Really? Come on, Ember Moon. I should say, come on, creative. Let's get with the freaking program here. At least with the Ember Moon, who I think has got a lot of potential. She's got a cool entrance. Yeah, her contacts and her eyes look cool. Her hair is cool. All that. She's got a good look. She needs a backbone. And quick. And again, we also had, don't worry, we had to have in a a loss for Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Oh, and we got it this week on SmackDown. We got it this week with Big E, Xavier, and Heavy Machinery defeating Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Rowan, and Daniel Bryan after it became like a, I don't know, an eight-person tag team match that you knew was coming. I mean, I think Teddy Long is behind the scenes on all these. And you had them beat Sami Zayn. I guess the only talking point coming out of this beyond, like, I'm tired of complaining about Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens losing. I don't know what they ever did to go on this terrible losing streak. I don't understand. It's killing me inside. But the talking point here is Kevin Owens walking out. I don't want to see Kevin and Sami feud again. We've seen it. That's what started to happen when their breakdown happened with, you know, however many times that they turned on each other. I don't need to see it again. So if that's where they're going, we've been there, done that, seen it. While they put on really good matches, it's not a match that would really, I think, do any favors for either man, considering we've seen it. And where do you go from there? Because one of the guys is going to have to lose. One of the guys is going to have to win. And even with the guy that wins, what do you do with him? To me, if they do that, it's just to hold me over. And furthermore, they build their final match as the final match a couple of years ago. I don't need to go back on that. It would just be wrong on so many levels. As great as the matches would be, that's not the purpose. And that's not the point here. So I think that's really the talking point is Kevin Owens walking out and Sami Zayn winning. Or losing, excuse me. Sami Zayn losing and taking the fall, which is just becoming a routine for any televised show outside of Stomping Grounds, which can you really count that as a win? I mean, outside of just Vince going, well, they think they're going to win, lose, but we're going to make a win. But the win's not going to mean anything, and they're going to lose the rest of their lives. I don't know. They must have pissed somebody off backstage. They really must have. It's just crazy. Craziness. So that's my SmackDown Live review. One other quick note before I close out the show that is quite interesting, that's coming through the news wire, is that Undertaker apparently has chosen his opponent for WrestleMania 36. So if you don't want to know who or what that is, I would end the show now. So spoiler alert for those of you who don't want to know or just plugging your ears going la 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 la, this is your time right now. Cut out the show and I'll, you know, see you tomorrow. But for those of you that are interested, Undertaker has apparently chosen Drew McIntyre as his opponent for WrestleMania 36. If that's the case, in Tampa in April 2020, I don't think that's Undertaker's final opponent. I still believe that Undertaker will go a full 30 years, and maybe he ends up not at next year's Survivor Series, even though it'll be an even 30 since he debuted, and I believe he'll compete next Survivor Series. He will end it at WrestleMania 37. So that's just a little bit of a idea in my brain. You know, I'm sure nobody has ever tried to predict the Undertaker's retirement, so I know I'm kind of the first one to do it, so bear with me. But that's just my current thoughts. I can't even say that with a straight face. But if that is indeed the case where Drew McIntyre is Undertaker's opponent, I think that's a good opponent for Undertaker. Why? Here's why. Because Drew McIntyre can make Undertaker look like a $1 million and like he's still got it. He's not Goldberg. He's not stiff in the ring. Drew McIntyre is fundamentally sound. He's believable. The promos he could cut about Undertaker, you may be the dead man. Like, I can hear it in my brain of the things that Drew could say and do. And he would fly around the ring for the Undertaker like he was being tossed around by an 800-pound man. It could be much better. Will it be a five-star match? No. But if you put Goldberg Undertaker next to Drew McIntyre Undertaker, it would make the Undertaker look like he's 10 years younger. That's what Drew could do for Undertaker. And it could wipe the bad taste out of people's mouths to some degree from Goldberg Undertaker that we all experienced at this past pay-per-view, two pay-per-views ago, at the greatest, the Super Showdown, rather. Boy, even my brain doesn't want to remember the name of the pay-per-view. But it could really help. And I know Undertaker would want to erase that from fans' minds as quickly as possible, too. So I'm fine with that. There could be a great program and lead up to that. And maybe we saw the seed planted for it here. I just want a reason why Undertaker initiated this attack. Why? Just give me a why, please. Please, please, please. I need a why. And then I'm fine with the rest of the story. So if that's indeed the case, good. It could also be super beneficial for Drew McIntyre, who could beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania, since Undertaker's undefeated streak is obviously long gone. You could have Drew beat down Undertaker in a brutal way where you think The Undertaker is done. This is it. You'll never see him again. And, you know, maybe he rises again. There's a lot you can do. But I think Drew, if he wins that match, could skyrocket him to the next level. Roman Reigns beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania, but that did nothing but, in my estimation, sour the fans even more, because it was positioned as Roman Reigns not as a heel, but as babyface versus babyface, and that's the problem. Drew McIntyre would play the heel and play it very well. There'd be clear-cut roles here, and fans would be all about booing Drew McIntyre. And it would just piss off fans even more that he could brag that he beat The Undertaker. Because Roman's not doing that. It's as if it never happened for Roman Reigns. Because how can you brag about beating one of the best and most beloved superstars of all time without getting booed out of the building? You can't. So people just have to just swallow it. And Roman Reigns has to swallow it too, because he's a babyface. You can't brag on that as a babyface. So it does you no favors. If Drew McIntyre is a heel, he could go to the bank every single time with it and bring it up every single time. So I'm cool with it. I think it would be a great rivalry that would make Undertaker look, again, much younger than he actually is, and light years ahead of Goldberg Undertaker. So one other quick thing I wanted to discuss before we close out the show is this 2 out of 3 falls obsession that WWE has lately. Like, why? I don't know what this is. Like, it seems like a Vince McMahon fetish right now. Vince McMahon gets stuck on these things, and right now 2 out of 3 falls is what really, you know, gets him off. I mean, seriously. Like, where are all these 2 out of 3 falls stipulations coming from? Think about how many 2 out of 3 falls matches we've had lately on TV. We had 2 on SmackDown Live. We've had some on Raw. It's all of a sudden they're just like, well, let's change it up. And they come up with an idea, and then they beat it to death. What is, I understand, like, 2 out of 3 falls can be cool. I get it. It can be. But here's the problem, twofold. Number one, you're overusing it to death. You're burying it, and then you resurrect it to kill it again. Number two, it is super predictable with 2 out of 3 falls that 99.9% of the time, it's going to go 1-1, and somebody has to win that third decisive fall. Maybe change it up once in a while. Have somebody sweep. Do 2-0. But they won't, because everyone's got to be an even playing field and add drama. But it's predictable to the point of sometimes that's not a good thing to be predictable on. Change it up. Stop with the 2 out of 3 falls. 2 out of 3 falls should be for a rivalry that's deserving of it. Please. So I don't know what the obsession is with that. But all right. Well, that's all I have for you guys today. Tomorrow, I'll be joined by my co-host Ashley. We'll be going over all these talking points and probably a lot more stuff I didn't even talk about or think about in our segment tomorrow, our show tomorrow, and going over probably Stomping Grounds, obviously some things from Raw and SmackDown, and the absence of the Firefly Funhouse, which made me cry, made me very sad this week. But maybe when the heck is Bray Wyatt going to debut? Anybody got any ideas? I don't even know. I really don't. I'd rather have it at the right time, as I said before. Right time. Just plan it out. So that'll be the show tomorrow, and that'll round out my shows for the week, and then I'll be back on Sunday again with my What If and Wrestling Nostalgia segment. Wrestling audio in your ears 4 days a week on this show, because I love this damn show, and I hope you guys do too. So, guys, thank you so much for joining me. Follow me on Twitter at The WWE Podcast. Of course, go to WWEPodcast.com for all of the podcast needs, including opinion articles and lots of other cool stuff. It's been redesigned for your viewing pleasure. And if you want an ad-free experience, Patreon.com/WWEPodcast. And please check us out there. So, guys, until next time, talk to you then.